You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Good Tuesday, everybody. The Roto Experts, Jake Seeley, Scott Angle. Get you ready for the fantasy baseball season. Talk about the latest news as we always do. Great show to get into today. Scott, how was your Monday in this brand new week of things?
It's interesting. You know, the NBA is hot right now as we get closer to the playoffs. All of a sudden, the Portland Trailblazers are the third best team in the Western Conference. I can't watch the Knicks anymore. And, of course, spring training. We got baseball coming up and lots of off-season NFL news. Free agency's right around the corner.
Yeah, a lot of stuff's going on. I don't know half those things you were talking about when it comes to basketball, but, you know, I want Bulls to tank mode, and people are tanking better than the Bulls, so it's just kind of frustrating at this point.
Yeah, the Bulls are doing a really good job of tanking. You know, they lost again last night. They got blown out. And, you know, despite all the talent, you know, they're just really playing very, very badly right now. So it's
the only thing, well, the Mavericks played worse the one game.
Yeah, you look at a team like the Brooklyn Nets, they're in it every night, but they've lost 9 straight.
I know, because they know how to just barely win. I almost prefer that. The other night against the Bulls when they were playing the Mavericks, they were actually losing. Then all of a sudden the Mavericks went full on, let's not even show up in the fourth quarter, and tanked worse than they tanked. So it's kind of interesting if you're trying to root from that perspective. You know what, real quick, before we get into the main news, does this whole Houston Texans thing, does that even bother you at all with the whole news that the GM is saying that they're not going to talk to any free agent that knelt for the national anthem last year?
It doesn't bother me personally, except for the fact that I think you should just talk to the best players, period.
Right.
You know, if you're managing a team, but it's going to strike a chord, you know, with a lot of people one way or the other that feel a lot more passionately about it than I do. Honestly, you know, it's, this whole debate about kneeling, it's like I kind of see both sides of it. It's one of those debates where, some people think that, okay, you're disrespecting the flag, and I understand where they're coming from. But at the same time, you know, there's also the angle of, well, because you guys fought for our freedom, part of our freedom is being able to, you know, express the individuality of kneeling as well. So
right.
It's I feel like there's almost a debate where, like, there's no right answer.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on the whole fact that, too, is that, you know, if you're just going to cut out potential players that help your team, I think that's just a big mistake right there. But
it's a bigger thing, Jake, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but
yeah,
it's a bigger thing of just like you go to sports to escape politics and racial tones and things like that, and then you turn on ESPN when you get all your talking heads in the morning. It's like, when am I going to hear about the games and stop hearing about the politics and the racism and stuff like that? You know, we use sports to get away from that. And, you know, that's the biggest thing to me is, you know, you can no longer get between the lines and ignore that stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it, too. You help make this go away if you stop putting the cameras on the one or two people who do it. Like, stop focusing on them and just don't show them on TV, and then people won't even know that it's happening, and they could just kind of go away and hopefully run its course and move on to the next thing that'll get everybody upset.
It's always going to be polarizing because, and I certainly understand why, and I understand why there's unrest on both sides of the debate.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I don't come from either background. You know, although my father was in the Army, you know, I'm not a veteran myself. You know, don't come from a military family. I do have African American people in my family, so that I understand their perspective of it too. You know, it's for me, it's like, you know, what is the right answer, and I haven't been able to find that in my mind.
I don't think anybody really has a catch-all right answer. But fantasy baseball, there's a lot of news that kind of trickled in yesterday, injury-wise, for people that are drafting and stuff like that. But real quick, before we get into that, if you want to go to get your Roto Experts exclusive edge fantasy baseball package, you do so right now This year's version is new and improved with more analysis than ever, including an all-day chat channel where you can get one-on-one advice, stats, projections, and improved cheat sheet generator. Get rankings from top-ranked analysts, myself, Jake Seeley, tips from award-winning Scott Angle and Tim McCullough. Scott's also a Hall of Famer. Enter code FNTSY at checkout and get your Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy Baseball package now. That's promo code FNTSY. Scott, the biggest one from yesterday, like there's been a lot, and we're going to talk about it, but the biggest one from yesterday that kind of came out of the blue, Danny Salazar is now going to start the season on the DL. There's a lot of people, including Matt Modica on this network, who have been big fans of Danny Salazar at his cost, talking about the potential. You see the strikeouts that he always brings, but his inability to stay healthy. And now we already know we're still over 3 weeks out of the season, and he's officially not even going to be ready to start the season. Is he even on your draft board at this point?
I don't know. Danny, I was a big Danny Salazar fan last year. I felt like the strikeout potential was really there, and you know it was going to be a breakthrough year, but then you had bad performances early in the year, inconsistency, and then you just had injuries, period. And with the strikeout potential, you know, guys like that are always going to be polarizing sort of figures. But now it's like 2017 has crept into 2018, and you're already looking at, you know, more injury issues. Last year, when you look at the K per 9, and it was 12.67, you know, that still makes him very attractive, but, you know, at the same time, if the guy can't stay healthy, you know, how is he going to work on anything? You know, last year, he had a 74.1 left on base percentage, which was sort of unlucky, too. His ERA was 4.28, but his FIP was only 3.48. So I can see where Matt's coming from. And of course, Matt is a big pitching expert, but already I'm dealing with some of the negatives now that I dealt with last year, and inconsistency was certainly an issue. It really depends on, like, where I get him. Like, if I get him as my fifth starter, maybe I'll think about it. But, you know, I still might veer in the direction of J.A. Happ if they're still both on the board.
Yeah, I would, too. And my biggest thing is I've actually never been a Salazar supporter. I owned him at one point during the one season of 2015, just because I think either traded or picked him up at some point. But, he started off as a reliever. He came out the next season after that with some relieving, some starting, and was kind of like a mixed in there. And, I mean, like relieving some games when he first came up through the minors. But, you know, so he started 10 games as a rookie, went 2-3. Solid ERA, 3.12, and everything was looking good there. Next season, starts 20 games. ERA goes over 4, but the strikeouts are still kind of there, and a little dip in it. And then he had 2015, which is basically his best season in his breaking out party. 3.45 ERA, over 9 per 9, or a strikeout per inning, 14 wins, 30 starts. I think that's what got everybody excited. It's like, all right, the next year rolls around, and the strikeouts go back up again. But here's my problem, Scott, and this is why I've never owned him, is the walks went up. Every time his strikeouts have gone up, his walks have gone up. He's never had his strikeouts go up without the walks also going up. And you saw that it went over 10.6 per 9. His walks were at 4 per 9. And then last year, as you mentioned, it was 12.7. But it walks, again, 3.8. The guy's whip, the career whip is 1.2 and change, 1.26. Last year is 1.34. I get the excitement, as you said. I get the appeal. I get the strikeouts are just so enticing. But he's only pitched over 137 innings once. And even if you got those strikeouts, the whip is going to kill him at the same time.
Look, the last 2 years, identical 1.34 whips. Is this guy going to break out, or is he just going to turn out to be Gio Gonzalez? Where Gio Gonzalez is always getting a lot of strikeouts, but the whip is never what you want it to be.
Right.
Maybe he has more strikeout potential than Gio does. You look at Gio last year, 201 innings pitched, 188 strikeouts. You know, he's never been that dominant of a strikeout pitcher, but, you know, you look at 2014 Gio, and he was a very good strikeout pitcher also in 2012. And also in 2011, you know, this guy could turn out to be Gio Gonzalez. Gio Gonzalez is a guy who has a 130 career whip. and last year was 117, but that was an outlier. You know, you might just be looking at this guy being the next Geo, and that's it.
Which isn't too exciting, sadly enough.
No.
That's the problem. All right, so
it's good enough to be your fifth starter if you can take a little bit of the hit on the whip.
Right, but I think that's the problem is, like, people like the supporters of him and people like Matt were drafting him as their third or fourth with the upside that, you know, he's finally going to break through. So now, again, he's starting the season in the DL, so looking more bleak by the day. To another one, this is kind of looking bleak too, and this is somebody that we used to enjoy watching play for the Mets, and then I got frustrated because he starts killing the Mets ever since he left. That's Daniel Murphy. There's now a question of whether or not he's going to be ready to start this season, coming off microfracture surgery. Scott, how far does he have to drop down the board for you to actually take the gamble on Daniel Murphy?
I took him in the fifth round of my slow draft.
Would you still do it today knowing that?
Numbers are just, what's that?
I said, would you still do that knowing this today, knowing that he might not be ready?
Maybe this was before this information, obviously.
Right.
This was about 4 days ago. Look, he wasn't going to track to make it up to opening day anyway. The numbers, when you finally get him back, though, you know what they're going to be. The Nationals were slow with him regardless, and it was always a question about whether he was going to make it to opening day or not. So you're still taking a risk regardless. You didn't hear anything better than what I heard 3 or 4 days ago. It's certainly not encouraging, but I'm prepared to be without Daniel Murphy for the first month. But, you know, after that, I'm going to get early. I should get early round production.
So you say as of today, still fifth, sixth, you talk fifth, sixth rounder in a 12-team or a 15-team?
In a 15-team. It's like I was at a point where I just couldn't let him slip anymore.
Yeah, see, yesterday yesterday we were talking about it on FST, and Greg brought this up, and that was before we got, because this was news in the afternoon yesterday where they said he might not be ready to start the season. We were just talking about the microfracture surgery in general, and Matt said in one of the recent NFBCs he went in the eighth round, and I said there's no way if I'm in that draft he makes it that far. Like, I'm jumping in the sixth round probably. In a 12-team, though, for, you know, the average people out there playing in a 12-teamer, I could see going to the eighth round because of that difference in the 15 to 12-team league. But in your typical – put it this way. I mean, you guys can just do the math, anybody out there. If he's around the 80th, 90th pick, he's coming off the board for me. At that point, it's too far.
Right. What was Greg's opinion on it?
He's a little bit more scared.
Yeah. Well, you know, Greg is the type of guy where as a guy starts season 0 for 12, he wants to cut him. So
yeah,
he's not the most patient guy. I can't see Greg waiting for Daniel Murphy to return. I have Daniel Murphy and Michael Conforto on the same roster because it's not about how you start, it's how you finish.
I assume you have DL spots on that team, correct? Yes. Did we lose Scott? Sounds like no Scott. We'll have to get him back, but I would definitely not. Let me hold on. For everybody listening, I'm checking with the producer so to let him know that we don't have Scott, and then I will continue. So there we go. Oh, Scott, hello? You're back. I heard you just. Yeah,
yes.
There we go.
Yes.
I was just about to start talking without you, and then I heard you come back.
No, what I was saying is, you know, I got Conforto in the 15th round, and it's not about how you start, it's about how you finish.
Okay, that's fair. All right, so here's another one. This is just kind of random happenings, and I think it's kind of funny. It might be fantasy related or not, but did you see John Lester's solution for throwing balls to first base this year?
Yes, I did. He's trying to bounce the ball to first base. based on what he used to see Pippen do as a bounce pass to Jordan. This is his latest way to deal with the yips. Anthony Rizzo wasn't at first base yesterday, so it cost him a two-base error.
Yep. So, all right. Here's what I have to say, Scott. And you've been around baseball a heck of a lot longer than I have. And, like, actually with the teams, you're out there, you get to go to the Mets and you see all this. Here's my question. And this is what I've been saying for the past, I don't know how many years, basically ever since this whole thing with John Lester started. And maybe I'm missing something, but I think a lot of people have the same question I do, Scott. So my question is this. If you're an opponent and you're facing John Lester, two things. How do you not just bunt at him half the time? Like, anybody who's not, like, the middle-of-the-order hitter, anybody with semi-speed at all, how do you not bunt to him on purpose every single time? And then once you're on base, how do you not just start looking at him and running to second base as soon as he, like, does anything? Like, I would just dare him to come after me because he's not going to chase you down on your way to second base and he can't throw. So I just don't understand why nobody's even tried this.
Yeah, it's an excellent point, you know, and it puts more responsibility on the catcher to cover something out of the box, and also the infielders, you know, to come in and cover, etc. You have to see how the Cubs deal with that. I don't think baseball's quite that simple, though, you know, when you talk about hitting the ball back to the box.
Okay, but at least, you know, when you're on base, I mean, don't you think some of these guys base, would be a lot, you know, more aggressive?
Haven't base runners historically been aggressive against Lester?
They have been, but I'm talking, I mean, you saw Rookie of the Year. I'd almost be doing that. I'd almost be, like, joking with him and start walking towards second base and, like, okay, I dare you to try and pick me off. Go ahead, try to throw it.
I don't think baseball's that simple because, you know, he's found ways to deal with it with underhanded throws. It's at some point, you know, it's not going to become a joke like that because once the ball does make it to first base and then you got the first baseman going back with the second baseman, you know, those guys know what they're doing.
I got to tell you, though, some of the players out there, if you're going to underhand throw it to first base, they're going to be so far off the second base that the first baseman's not going to have time to throw it there and get him out anyway.
It's also, though, it's not that simple either, though. It's about, you know, maybe I'm not going to throw over. If my fastball gets to the plate quick enough and the catcher has a good enough release, you're still going to get thrown out.
All right, fair enough. I just think somebody should try it at least. But we're going to come back after the break.
Maybe it's spring training.
Yeah, it's Roto Experts of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Jake Steele, Scott Angle, getting ready for the baseball season and talking other things.
The fan-controlled Football League is making fantasy football a reality. Like a real-life version of Madden, fans will vote on all personnel decisions and play calls in real time, and what the fans say goes. Visit FCFL.io to learn more. The FCFL, where you're in control.
Welcome back. It's the Roto Experts, Jake Seeley, Scott Engel. Talk of fantasy baseball, get you ready for the season. Some NFL news, some breaky stuff that we saw during the break. Scott, do you know what the song is from? You recognize it? No?
Sounds somewhat familiar. If you tell me, I'm going to go, damn.
It's the bike training scene in Punch-Out, where he's running in front of the city behind the bike. That's
Mike
not what
Tyson's Punch-Out?
Yeah.
No, I didn't have that game. When everybody had the Super Nintendo, I had the Sega Master System.
Oh, well, that was original Nintendo. It was Sega.
Yeah.
So you had the Sega.
Yeah.
That's what you had.
When the original Nintendo, I had Sega.
Okay.
Although I did Punch Out in the arcades, though, back in the day.
All right. Well, so you got it a little bit. So you might have been able to play.
No, there wasn't a training scene. Your Punch-Out arcade game wasn't based on Mike Tyson.
Oh, okay. Nah, I never played the arcade game. I only played the one at home. And I never beat Mike Tyson at home when I was that young.
It's okay. I never beat Bald Bull in the arcade.
Fair enough. By the way, if you want to go check out DFS Fantasy Factor, perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player, flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single-entry contests only. Fantasy Factor has fun contests going right now. Free entry into the March Madness bracket and a Sweet 16 bracket. Fantasy Factor is running a 100,000 home run derby this year. So make sure you go sign up and enter all these things. FantasyFactor.com. A lot of free money for a lot of free fun. You should definitely check that out. So the breaking news I was telling you about, Scott, during the break is from Ian Rappaport that the Rams, with the franchise, in case people don't know, the deadline today for franchise tags. So if you declare them and you don't, you know, things are over. So, it was actually Jason LaCoforna. It wasn't Ian Rappaport. Jason LaCoforna tweeted out that if the Rams use a franchise tag today, it's going to be on LaMarcus Joyner. Sammy Watkins won't get tagged. The team would like to keep both, but Joyner would be the one getting the tag. So I tweeted out, Scott, that it's going to be a very interesting free agent market if Allen Robinson and Sammy Watkins are both not tagged as rumored today and both out there for free agency. I know the Rams would like to get Watkins back. I just find this surprising. I know Joyner makes more sense. Like, if you told me between the two, which is the better talent as of right now, I would keep Joyner. It's just surprising to me after how much they gave up in that trade to bring in Sammy Watkins that they're willing to not guarantee they can keep the value they got back. Because basically, if Watkins does find a better deal, they traded away that second rounder and all that value for nothing.
Yeah, but I don't think you can go back and look at the past and base your personnel moves on the fact that, okay, we gave up this for him. You have to view it in the current lens. What player is more valuable to our franchise right now? What player is more replaceable? And I think that's easily Sammy Watkins. LaMarcus Joyner is regarded around the league as more of the more unheralded guys in his position. And with Watkins, they'd like to have him back, but he's more of a luxury, I think, than a necessity than Joyner is. Watkins gives them the ability to, he basically is their third receiver. So why right. wouldn't you keep? Why would you keep your starting? Wouldn't you keep your starting free safety over your third wide receiver? Now he's a luxury in terms of when you can challenge a defense with Kupp and Woods and Watkins. Put so much pressure on them, but they'll be able to easily replace that. I don't think that's how general managers think. Oh, well, we gave up so much for him last year, so we have to franchise him now. I don't think that'd be a smart decision.
I don't think it would be either, but we've seen organizations make non-smart decisions before based on things like this.
Yeah, with the way the Rams built things, you know, they've been smart.
That is true. That's true. All right, that's a good point. I definitely agree with you. Like I said, if I'm just talking about who you want for this team, take Lamar Joyner, and you know you could always draft or pick up a third wide receiver that's out there in the market that doesn't cost you Sammy Watkins money, and be fine with, as you said. I mean, they have Josh Reynolds on the team too. They drafted last year. I don't think they're hurting for wide receivers right now, but that's what we know. We're gonna have to watch today. Like I said, the Jaguars supposedly are not going to franchise Allen Robinson. If they are, supposedly they're going to franchise Marquise Lee. I think that's a huge mistake, but we'll have to watch to see how the deadline plays out. We'll probably talk more about that tomorrow. To get back to fantasy baseball, and actually to get back to the Cubs, Scott, I wanted to bring this up. So Ian Happ this spring so far has been on fire. He's been lighting things up. Here's the problem with Ian Happ, and I keep seeing him climb up draft boards and climb up draft boards and climb up draft boards, and the talent, that's fine. I have no problem with the talent. Deserves to. I would love to see him have a full-time starting job. My question is, does he? Because this team just has too many options. Almora's defense, Almora has been looking pretty poor so far in spring, so this is helping Happ, but at the same time, they have Almora. Jason Hayward's not going to the bench, so you're basically talking about two spots out there, and Kyle Schwarber comes in slimmed down and is looking terrific himself. So you have Schwarber and left, so now you have Almora and Happ battling for center field. You still have Ben Zobrist in the mix. If you throw anybody inside the infield, there's really no spot to go there with Javier Baez. I love Ian Happ and his potential, Scott, but is he being overdrafted right now? Because I don't see a path where he gets 140 games.
What's the path, though, if they put him in a corner outfield spot and they move Jason Hayward to center field? Do you really want Amoritz batting the lineup that often? I mean, it's almost like Juan Lagares with the Mets.
I know, but then when does Zobrist play? See, that's the problem is they got so many pieces here.
Yeah, but something's got to give. And
I agree with you, but what is
Zobrist is up there in age, and, you know, Almora doesn't give him the offense.
Okay, so you think there's a potential that Zobrist and Almora are both bench players for this season? I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just asking
you. I mean, the most sense, you want a lineup in the bat, like a bat like that in the lineup, and you can't sit Jason Hayward. You know, because he is the team's best defensive player, and he does offer more offense, I think, than Alberto Almora will.
$20 million a year.
Yeah. You know, last year, only 12 home runs and 2 stolen bases for Ben Zobrist. He's much of a clubhouse guy and a utility guy more than anything. I'm not managing the Cubs, but I would put Happ in a corner outfield spot and put Hayward in center field.
And now who's the leadoff hitter? Because that's the other problem with it is Almora was supposed to be their leadoff hitter. Now, I mean, Happ's not a true leadoff hitter. You got Bryant, Rizzo, Contreras, Schwarber. They're all big guys. I mean, who do you bet leadoff? That's the thing.
Who's your best on-base guy if you don't have the pure speed merchant?
Probably Chris Bryant, right?
Yeah. See, teams do it. You know, they don't have a, you know, they don't have a speed merchant.
Well, here, let me say this, Scott. For everything you're saying, I don't disagree with you. I don't disagree with you. If you find, like, if you have to back Chris Bryant first, that's like a problem most teams would love to have. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to back Chris Bryant first. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I have to bench.
Did they hit Rizzo lead off at 1.2?
I don't know. I don't know if they did. But the interesting, the point is that I want to make with this is, like, while I agree with everything you say, it is Madden, and it is a team where it's like, Do you really see them going that route? I this is what I come back to the question of. And it's fine if you do. Is the price that Ian Happ is right now, would you still take him with all these question marks of not knowing? Or are you in full confidence? And basically, I guess that's my question to you. Are you in full confidence that Ian Happ is going to get 140, 150 games and you're okay with where he's going?
I think he'll probably play about 130. Yeah, Rizzo did hit leadoff for a spell last year.
Okay. But let's say Ian Happ in the 10th round.
Maybe
that's where he's been hovering about
the
last
two rounds
week.
For me too early.
See, that's the question because you is it your hesitancy the fact that, like, just in case he doesn't get that playing time?
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm telling you what I think should happen. And,
right, and I agree with you.
It makes sense to me, but I don't know if that's the way the manager's thinking.
Right, and that's
Last year, Rizzo had 50 at-bats, and he had 300 as a leadoff hitter with 373 on-base percentage, 5 home runs and 12 RBIs, and 11 runs scored.
So maybe Rizzo bats leadoff? Well, let me ask you this, then. You taking Ian Desmond, or are you taking Ian Happ on the board?
Feel like Desmond's going to play more regularly, especially since they haven't signed a first baseman. Desmond's just got to stay healthy, and he's like 20-20.
Yep.
You hope he hits 280. He may not, but I think I'm going to go with Ian Desmond.
How about this one? How about teammates, Scott? How about this? Because this is one of the appeals with Ian Happ, too, is a lot of leagues still have second base eligibility for Ian Happ. So do you take Javier Baez or Ian Happ with both of them having these playtime question marks?
I feel like Javier Baez has an easier path, you know, with the way Addison Russell plays.
I do, too. All right, here's the last one for you, then. Somebody who I think is underrated and people are overlooking as a nice value, Eddie Rosario. Or Ian Happ?
Eddie Rosario or Ian Happ? I remember hearing so much about Rosario last year, too. It's, as a guy that I liked.
Tough one, huh?
I feel like I'm going to get more speed from Rosario, don't you?
Maybe a touch more. I think the biggest difference for me is I think you get the better batting average with Rosario.
What if you play in an OBP league? Rosario's only 328 last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, now you're talking about a similar player. Now it comes down, if you're telling me you're playing an OBP league, for me, and I'm looking at my projections right now, it's going to come down to where they bat in the order. Because Rosario's going to bat in the top five, so he's going to have those RBI opportunities. If Ian Happ does
get full-time. Counting numbers might be also the same, but isn't Rosario guaranteed a clearer path, though?
He is, but I was going to say his counting numbers might be better depending on where Ian Happ is hitting. Like, what if Ian Happ gets this job and he's batting sixth behind Schwarber?
I like to take the guy with the job, though.
I would, too. That's what I'm saying. I think Eddie Rosario is a little bit underrated. I think people are overlooking him and his value. All right. How about this one? How about this, Scott? I don't know if people have noticed this either. If you're looking for steals... Everybody knows it's very hard to find them right now. They're at a premium. People are overpaying. If you watch the labor draft, Jose Peraza and Jonathan Villar both went inside the top 11 rounds just because people want speed. Starling Marte is stealing bases like a madman so far this spring. Are you going to move Starling Marte up your board because of this? Just because we already know Starling Marte has plenty of value to begin with, but now you add in the potential for even more steals and what's such a hard thing to find right now?
I mean, it's not surprising. It's Starling Marte. If you don't have any illusions about the power last year and 309 at-bats. He stole 21 bases. This guy could easily steal 45, 50 bases. I like him better in a batting average league than I do in an OBP league. I think people just have a sour taste in their mouth last year if he got suspended.
And I think they are also expecting power, which he was never really going to be a big-time power hitter.
That's not his thing.
So I think that's the good way of putting it. It's like people got soured last year, and it's turned out to be a value right now. Actually, well, I'm going to pull this up. Where do you think he's going?
This guy stole 47 bases in 2006.
I know. People seem to have forgot about that.
Bats.
He is.
They want the 19 homers since 2015. It's not going to happen. They were disappointed in 2016 with the power, and last year he got suspended. It was, you know, he could still hit a dozen homers and give you 50 bases, 50 steals.
His current ADP is 52. He's one spot behind Christian Yelich. You taking Yelich or Marte?
I think I'm taking Yelich. I'll get a little more pop there, maybe a better batting average.
Okay.
I'll still get some steals.
True. He's going right in front of Nelson Cruz. You taking Marte or Cruz? I think Cruz just...
Depends on what my need is. I mean, Cruz, you know, he's going to get you 35 bombs, but I think speed is more as a premium. It depends on your need at that point. If I already drafted D. Gordon, maybe I'd take Nelson Cruz, but if that's the flow of the draft. But I think I want the speed guy more. I can get Jay Bruce with 30 home runs, not as much of a batting average a few rounds later.
All right, here's one for you then, Scott. How about this? Because their numbers should be probably pretty similar, with a bit more pop for this guy and a bit more speed for Starling Marte. A.J. Pollock or Starling Marte?
I just love A.J. Pollock so much if he stays healthy.
Everybody seems to.
But it's such a big if to the point where, like, the Diamondbacks acquired Jared Dyson. You know what? I'm still going to gamble on Pollock. You know, last year only 425 at-bats, 14 homers, 20 steals. If that guy can play a full season, you know, he's going to be 25-45. And I just don't think that Marte can match that. You know, maybe he'll have about the same batting average, same on-base percentage.
Yeah, that's the big if, though, is if he could play. You still think he's going to get 25 with the humidor?
Why not? I mean, 425 at-bats, 14, give him another 10 if he stays healthy. I'm not going to overrate the humidor, you know, but I think that's why I top out at 25. Right. Otherwise, I'll say 30, you know.
All right, and speaking of fantasy baseball, real quick for everybody out there, make sure you check out Fantrax.com. You can create the ultimate dynasty, keeper, or redraft fantasy league using Fantrax's free commissioner product. Find out how it feels to have the deepest player pool, multi-team trades, and player salary contract options all at your fingertips, and all are fully customizable. And with Fantrax Treasury, you can set league entry fees and distribute payouts without a third party, so you don't have to track down owners for payments. Enter promo code AL, that's A-L, at sign up for a chance to win 10 private consultations with Fantasy Baseball Hour host Al Melchior, valued at $109. Find out why Fantrax is the home of fantasy sports. Check out Fantrax.com today. Scott, real quick before we hit the break, with the humidor, I also think that people are not realizing they might adjust it through the season. Like, oh, we overdid it. Let's pull it back a little bit. But we're going to continue these type of talks, continue to get you ready for your fantasy baseball draft. It's Scott Angle. It's Jake Seely. It's Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Skix sneakers are taking over tailgates and alumni homes across America. Skix canvas high top, low top, slip-on, and kids tennis style sneakers designed in officially licensed college colors and logos is a must-have for every college fan's wardrobe. Fun, fashionable, and comfortable, whether you're at the big game or watching the game at home, Skix helps fans perform better. Go to Skix.com and use promo code FNTSY for 15% off your pair now. That's Skix.com. Skix sneakers, the soul of a true fan.
Welcome back, Roto Experts. Jake Seely, Scott Angle. We're staying alive for you, that's for sure. We hopefully get you to stay alive for your fantasy baseball season. Also, in case you guys want to know, You love watching your fantasy players score a winning touchdown? Imagine you actually got to call that touchdown play. The fan-controlled football league is putting play calling in the hands of fans with real professional football players running the action. From drafting rosters to voting on trades, the FCFL fan is one part coach, one part GM, and one part owner. This is all done through the fan token, where fans earn fan tokens each time their vote yields a successful outcome. The more fan tokens a fan earns, the greater power is attributed to their future votes. So visit FCFL.io to learn how you can take control. Scott, continuing this fantasy baseball talk and continuing to talk about potential problems when it comes to playing time. There's been rumors and talk from people that cover the team that the Cincinnati Reds are going to rotate their outfield. We know they have Billy Hamilton. It's sounding like that he's probably the least affected by this. But they have Jesse Winker, who's their young prospect that they're trying to get into the lineup of playing time. Scott Schebler has looked really nice, but you just do the math right there. Guess who I haven't said yet? Adam Duvall, who just happens to hit 30 home runs. Problem is, now they're saying, well, maybe Billy Hamilton's not so safe, even though he is the leadoff hitter, because he doesn't get on base that much, and he could even sit and only get 130, 140 games. And what it sounds like is we might get Billy Hamilton, Jesse Winker, Adam Duvall, and Scott Schebler all playing between 120 and 130 games this year by rotating. I have at least, not in daily transaction league, Scott, but in weekly transaction where you set your lineup on Sunday and it's stuck for the entire week, I've moved all four of them down my draft board because there's no way I want to risk some guy only playing three or four times a week every week.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Like, you know, they want to get Winker into the mix, but who do you really take out there? You know, that's very, very hard, you know, to decide right now. Even Hamilton doesn't get on base as much as you want. You have to look at the defense, and you know he's just still so disruptive on the base paths. But you know, then you look at Jesse Winker. You know, 2016 in Louisville, hit .303 with 22 home runs, and you know, looks like he fashions a higher batting average than some of these other corner guys, but you don't pull Duvall out because he's just such a power force. And
right.
You know, Schebler earned the playing time last year. You know, this is a situation where they're going to have to rotate and, you know, find something for everybody here. And it's not going to be the three same outfielders consistently working with each other. You're going to see it changed up a lot.
Yeah, I think this is a problem that maybe they didn't get ahead of. Like, you would say, I just go out there, and I'm not saying everybody's going to say, oh, they believe in the Scott Schebler or, you know, whatever. But I have to think that, you know, Schebler or Duvall could have found a new team somewhere to get this team some pitching help. I mean, there's no doubt this team needs pitching. And they have Winker, as you mentioned. They're trying to find a spot for Nick Senzel in the infield. Maybe he can bump Scooter Gennett. But, I mean, this is just a team that has, like, these young hitting prospects that they want to get in the lineup, and they have a giant void in the rotation. It kind of almost feels like this should have been taken care of by the front office.
I think that's the way a fan will look at it, you know, and especially a fantasy player where you're taught, I'm going to have surplus, get rid of it. But, you know, for whatever reason, the organization's not looking like this because one injury or one cold streak, and you need that fourth guy to be a third. And it's kind of like you almost equate it to like the Philadelphia Eagles situation in football. You know, some teams like having that kind of depth. You know, even the Mets, you know, Brandon Nimmo, maybe he would compete for a starting job on another team. But once Conforto comes back, he's going back to the bench. You know, teams want to have that outfield depth. Look, we're just talking about the Diamondbacks. Jared Dyson could start for a lot of teams. But, you know, now he's going to be the fourth outfielder because those teams want the depth. You know, they don't look at it quite like the fantasy guy does. Like, okay, I have surplus. You know, let me trade it away.
You know how you wanted the easy way to fix this problem, Scott?
Yeah.
I have the 100% easiest way. And it fixes the Mets problem, the Reds problem, the Diamondbacks problem. It fixes a lot of problems, and it makes baseball better. Put the DH in the National League.
Yeah, well, this goes along with all the other Jake Seeley things, like, get rid of kickers in fantasy football and, you know, get
let's make things more fun.
You want to be radical. You're going to want to be more radical, but, you know, it is.
That's not radical. People have been calling that for years for it to happen.
You want to make these changes, but things
aren't
the way they are.
I want your honest opinion. You want to be behind the DH in the National League?
I mean, nowadays, for or against it, to be honest with you.
All right, well, let me make my quick case if you're neither for nor against it. See if maybe I can
you
get
feel
you
strongly about it. You know, I'm not going to vote against it. That's what I'm saying.
Let me see if I can get you to swing maybe like 60-40% on like the side of the DH. So my point is basically because this is my biggest point is because baseball's changed now today where even starting in high school, if you're seen as a potential elite level pitcher, they stop teaching you how to hit. Like back in, you know this, back in the day, the best athletes were a hitter and a pitcher. Even in college, there was a lot of times where there was players coming out like Ohtani, where it's like, is he going to be a hitter? Is he going to be a pitcher? Nowadays, these guys stop hitting before they even get to college. And then you see these pitchers out there on the field. You know, there's a reason we celebrate Syndergaard is because he's one out of 150 pitchers who can actually hit the ball. I just think it makes it more entertaining. It adds more strategy because this is the other thing, Scott. And I will say this. A lot of people argue the opposite to me. There's like, there's more strategy when you have the pitcher coming up because you don't know whether to bunt. But no, there's only one strategy. Your decision's already made, Scott. If the pitcher comes up and there's somebody on base and there's less than two outs, he's sacrificing. If there's not, he's trying to swing away and hopefully get a hit. Your decision's already made.
You know, I'm so used to it that I'm just numb to it. You change it, I'm going to complain. Not going to complain. You don't change it, I'm not going to complain either. It's what I'm used to. At some point, you just get used to things, and I don't have a strong opinion on it. You make a lot of good points, but you know what? If it doesn't change, I'm not going to sit here and lose sleep over it.
No, but did I get you like
5%? It's not going to happen, so you know why am I going to get upset about it?
I actually think it will. I think eventually it's coming.
Yeah, well, I heard that years ago, too. But, you know, and then I heard from Pat Mayo about, you know, how umpires were going to be robots, too. So some things are just, they're not going to happen, and you just accept the way it is, and you go with it.
You know? Hold on. You brought that up.
Because one of my biggest peeves with baseball is, it's like the All-Star games at midseason, and you get the first half All-Stars. You know, then you have guys who make the All-Star team and have terrible second halves. But, you know, it's not going to change. And what really is the solution?
No, actually, so real quick, because you brought it up, but before I do that, I just want to let everybody know about DKMS. Did you know it only takes 1 minute to potentially save a life? 1 minute. That's how long it takes to swab your cheeks and join the donor list at DKMS. There are currently over 900,000 registered donors in the U.S., and we still need more. There's an American diagnosed every 3 minutes with blood cancer. There can never be enough donors. For only $45, you can help DKMS register new bone marrow donors. DKMS donors save approximately 19 lives a day, and we want you to help save just one. Please, if you can, go to dkms.org/FNTSY today. Scott, you said the thing about the robot umpires. So my buddy about a year and a half ago said this to me, and I think it was an ingenious idea. And I just want to get your quick thoughts on it, and we'll get back to fantasy baseball. But he said, this is how you incorporate, like, whether you want to call them robots, if you want to call them video, whatever you want to call it for the umpires calling balls and strikes. Here's how he said to implement it. You have it implemented. It calls balls and strikes. That's all it does. And you still have an umpire behind home plate who has it relayed in his ear or like however it does where so he still calls what the computer called so it still looks like he's making the calls, not like you're trying to trick somebody, but just to keep that authenticity, the old school baseball, there's still an umpire behind home plate and he's still making the safe and out calls at plays at home and if things are fair or foul and stuff like that. So he's still making every single other call, but he's also calling the balls and strikes which are relayed to him in his ear by a computer. Do you think that could work?
I don't know. It sounds like a whole lot of mess to me, to be honest with you. It's overcomplicating things. Everybody's got ideas about how to change the game nowadays because.
Well, did you see CB Buckner yesterday? He's already calling strikes two feet off the plate already.
Well, we've had that. You know, we got our guys with wide strike zones, etc. It's part of the game. Again, it's nothing I feel strongly about, but everybody really has their ideas now, because the game does not appeal to younger people, I don't think. And I think the game has become long and boring, you know, to millennials.
Oh, I had the solution for that last
people,
week.
People younger like that. Everybody's got a solution. I was watching Joel Sherman on the MLB Network, and he came up with maybe the best single idea that I've heard.
Well, share it to me. I'll tell you if it's better than mine.
He said, well, I know you, Jake. You probably don't think it's better than yours.
Of course not.
Yeah, but I love you. look, maybe the single best idea I've heard. He threw out three ideas, and one of them was like the fan-controlled football league. And I'm like, well, you know, fan-controlled football league's already doing that, Joel, so forget it. you know, in-game control. Because I think if the fan-controlled football league works for football, it'd be wonderful for baseball to get people more involved. But his point was, like, take the 10% of home runs that were from last year, right? Look at how the NBA revolutionized the game with the three-pointer, and everybody thought it was crazy at the time, and now it's so woven into the fabric that a three-pointer is just exciting as a dunk, right? He said, if you hit a home run over, say, 465 feet, because that's the 10 percentile, it becomes a two-run homer. Imagine the Yankees coming to the bat in the bottom of the ninth, down by two, and Stanton is up, right?
See,
you get a two-run homer to tie the game. I like that.
I get the idea behind it, but the problem is it's not like a three-pointer where the fact that anybody can do it if you have the skill. Like, you know, you have to be a massive power. Like, at some point, no matter how good Altuve...
Well, it's gotten to the point now where everybody can do it.
Jose Altuve is not hitting 465, ever. No matter how good he is. What I was saying is, like, you need the giant bats.
There was another one that he had was good, like use a pinch runner once a game.
Oh, that's not that bad. Here's the one that I said, Scott. I'll tell you, and this is how you get millennials involved. Mine actually doesn't affect the on-game. Like, the rules stay the same. I said, this is how you get millennials into baseball. And that's my specific thought process, is trying to get millennials into baseball. And, Scott, you've seen this. Like I said, you go to the Mets games all the time. When you look at the crowd, what are 50%, maybe even 80% of them doing right now? They're looking at their phones the entire time.
Right.
So here's what you do, is you start a game. Somebody needs to develop the app. I'm going to talk to Jeremy about it when I come up there or something, because somebody needs to develop a game app. And all you do is throughout the game is you call things during the game, not you controlling it, just, hey, Billy Hamilton just got a first base. Is he going to get a steal? Next guy up, Adam Duvall is at the plate. Is he going to hit a home run? Is he going to hit a double? And, you know, the highest score at the end actually wins something. You put something in your pocket. Guess what? You're invested in every single at-bat through the game.
Yeah, and it kind of goes into the trend of you're seeing a lot of, you know, these startups, et cetera, and also, you know, big outfits like the NBA doing NBA in play, where you're actually involved in the game while it's going along. And
right.
That's what you want. Baseball, I think baseball needs that sort of interactivity more than any other sport. I think the FCFL is going to work because, you know, it's football. And everybody wants to play Monday morning quarterback. NBA in play works, you know, from all accounts of everybody who's played it. But baseball, I think, needs it because you need to have interactivity. I was talking to Tony about this morning, you know, on the Fantasy News Desk. You sit and don't say anything during a baseball game. Listen around you. There's 30,000 conversations going on, and two of the three of them are not about the game.
Yeah. And that's what I'm telling you. How much more fun would that be? And you would get people talking about the game because you'd be like, hey, is Adam Duvall going to hit a home run? Well, you know, for the last time that he faced blah, blah, he did this, and then people are going to try to be pulling that up. Or, like, you think Syndergaard is going to get his 10th strikeout here or something like that. You know, I mean, that's how you keep people invested from the beginning of the game to the end.
Yeah, I think so. You have to make baseball more interactive.
Did you ever try that in-game fantasy app? Did you ever try that one?
The NBA in play?
No, the baseball one. The baseball, it was called in-game.
No,
It was by Fanamana. I think they still have it going on. It was where basically you try to get a hit streak going. So every single time somebody comes to, and you can pick a player from any game that's currently, and it's live. So if you have 13 games going on right at the moment that you're in the app, it'll show you all the hitters that are coming up to the plate, and you just have to pick somebody who's hopefully going to get a hit.
Yeah, and you know what? NASCAR actually started something like that too this year with their fantasy live game. You have one garage driver that you can actually put in the game, in the race this year before the last segment starts.
Oh, really?
So if one of your drivers wrecks, you can replace him.
Well, that's kind of cool. I would definitely like that. But real quick before we get out of here, I want to make sure everybody knows. You got to catch the DKMS 2018 March Madness Special next Monday, March 12th, 4 p.m. right here on the Fantasy Sports Network with host Craig Carton. Get the edge. Fill it out your bracket with analysis from Greg Sussman, Mike Blewett, and special guest, one of the best in the business, Yahoo's Brad Evans. If you're looking to make some money, Gabe Morrissey and Blackjack Fletcher will line your pockets as well. The broadcast will be simulcast on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube live page. It's the DKMS 2018 March Madness Special, Monday, March 12th at 4 p.m. Eastern, here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Scott, it's been another good day of the Roto Experts. Any parting thoughts for everybody?
Any parting thoughts to anybody? Sad day in Phoenix. The Suns were eliminated from playoff contention.
Already?
Yeah.
Dang. Hopefully the Bulls are soon, too. I really want the Bulls.
That's eight straight seasons for the Suns now. The Suns played the Heat last night. How about that?
That's a lot of fire going on there. And a lot of fire on the show tomorrow. Scott Engel, Jake Seeley. It's the Roto Experts of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Have a good one, everybody.